This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments Thursday on whether former President Donald Trump is immune from prosecution for alleged crimes while still in office. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The hearing ran over 2 hours, starting with an attorney for Donald Trump.
The framers of our Constitution viewed an energetic executive as essential to securing liberty.
And D. John Sauer argues the fear of prosecution would hinder that.
That looming threat will distort the president's decision-making.
Justice Elena Kagan giving a hypothetical about a president ordering a military coup.
You're saying that's an official act.
I think it would depend.
That's immune.
But Trump appointee Justice Brett Kavanaugh says the question is when immunity can apply.
The president is subject to prosecution for all personal acts, just like every other American for personal acts. The question is acts taken in official capacity.
The case could be sent back to the lower courts, which could delay a decision until after the November election. I'm Jackie Quinn.
U.S. Defense Department spokesman Major General Patrick Ryder said Thursday that U.S. military vessels have begun to construct the initial stages of the temporary repair and causeway at sea to deliver aid to Gaza.
We're aware of the significant interest in this important effort and will provide much more information in the very near future as we work alongside the international community to rush aid to the people of Gaza.
Earlier, a U.N. spokesperson said a United Nations team in the Gaza Strip visiting the site for the pier had to seek shelter in a bunker for some time on Wednesday after the area came under fire. Major General Ryder said a small number of mortars landed in the vicinity of the coordination area for humanitarian assistance, but had not impacted U.S. operations and equipment since it happened before U.S. forces had begun. This is VOA News. Some college campuses across the United States called in police to break up pro-Palestinian demonstrations, while others waited out. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Atlanta police and Georgia state troopers arrested at least 17 people during pro-Palestinian demonstrations on the Embry campus. One student interviewed by the Associated Press was shocked to see law enforcement on the scene.
This is insane. I just saw police use unnecessary violence for peaceful protesters. I saw police knock students to the ground. Clearly, you see a bunch of arrests going on.
An Emory spokeswoman said that university police had ordered several dozen demonstrators who set up tents on campus to leave and added that the group trespassed onto the private school. Emory is just one of many universities across the nation protesting the Israel-Hamas war. Demonstrations at colleges in other major cities like Los Angeles, Austin, and New York continue. I'm Haya Panjwani.
Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory, on Thursday called for international sanctions against Israel for its treatment of the Palestinians. VOA's Jeff Custer has more.
Albanese, an Italian lawyer, is one of dozens of independent human rights experts the United Nations mandated to report and advise on specific areas. In her case, Palestinians and the occupied Palestinian territory. Speaking to reporters in Cairo Thursday, Albanese said Israel is endangering Palestinian existence on what remains of their land and accused Israel of cleansing Palestinians.
At this point, Israel has reneged on its international obligations to a degree that warrants an imperative implementation of immediate and unconditional sanctions, which should entail first and foremost an armed oil embargo.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Two U.S. officials say the United States will pull the majority of its troops from Chad and Niger as it works to restore key agreements governing the role the American military and its counterterrorism operations may play in those countries. Agreements in both countries allow the U.S. to conduct critical counterterrorism operations and have supported military partner training. Concern is now growing that U.S. influence in Africa is losing ground to overtures from Russia and China. Join VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises as we delve into the heart of the world's most pressing conflicts and crises, from the Israel-Hamas war to the Russia-Ukraine war, as well as regional hotspots spanning from Asia to Africa and beyond. We also shine a light on humanitarian crises and the ongoing ramification of the climate crisis on the world's population. Flashpoint Global Crises is your source for understanding the critical issues shaping our world and the people at the heart of these crises. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, April 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Over 1,300 delegates and 400 companies participate in the American Chamber of Commerce Summit in Nairobi.
The 2024 summit's theme intentionally draws on the previous editions to develop a strategic platform for commercial advocacy, which will strengthen bilateral trade relations between Kenya and the U.S., as well as between our region and the U.S.
Malawi and Israel signed labor export deal on farm workers. Malawi's information minister says President Chakwera and Vice President Chilima enjoy cordial working relations despite corruption allegations. At least 20 million children miss out on one or more vaccines globally. The WHO says during World Immunization Week, Liberian President Joseph Boakai loses a 10-year case in the Supreme Court.
The president of Liberia cannot remove an official of government from that particular autonomous agency without cause. And cause is a condition subsequent. It must be proven before any action of removal.
And all style dresses help Namibian women look ahead. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Secretary of Commerce says it is not enough for the United States to just say it plans to invest and collaborate more in Africa. It must also show up. In her first official trip to East Africa, Gina Raimondo says she also plans to listen and learn as she participates in the fourth edition of the American Chamber of Commerce Summit in Kenya this week. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo was there and has this report.
About 1,300 delegates and 400 companies are participating in the 4th American Chamber of Commerce Summit in Nairobi, where Kenya's President William Ruto says his country is not only ready for business, but it also means business.
The 2024 summit's theme, Catalyzing the Future of U.S. East Africa Trade and Investment, intentionally draws on the previous editions to develop a strategic platform for commercial advocacy, which will strengthen bilateral trade relations between Kenya and the U.S., as well as between our region and the U.S.
The U.S. Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, participated in this year's summit, saying it's not enough to state the intentions of the United States to invest more and collaborate with Kenya.
You also have to show up, and that's why I'm here. We have to show up, and when we show up, we have to listen and to learn.
In her first official trip to East Africa, Raimondo reiterated President Joe Biden's December 2022 message that the U.S. is all in on Africa, and to that end says she traveled with 14 members of the President's Advisory Council on Doing Business in Africa.
Africa has changed the narrative, and the companies that are here today know that, and they reflect the optimism and commitment from the U.S. business community about the opportunities in Kenya and across the continent. I'm also thrilled to announce a historic partnership to harness artificial intelligence, facilitate data flows, and empower digital upskilling with Kenya.
This partnership, she says, is the first of its kind with an African nation to promote the safe development and deployment of AI. In addition, 7 private sector deals on digital transformation and commitments were made involving companies including the NBA, Cisco, Pfizer, and Qualcomm. 2 new grants by the U.S. Trade and Development Agency were announced to expand semiconductor fabrication in Kenya and the construction of a fiber network along the railways. Rebecca Miano, Kenya Cabinet Secretary with the Ministry of Investments, Trades and Industry, told participants that Kenya should be a destination for investors, and not only because of its young, educated and innovative workforce.
We also have a green story, decarbonizing the world. Kenya is a key player on the energy sector. We have renewable energy that counts of up to 95% of the electricity that is consumed in this country is renewable. We have a target to make it 100% in the next few years.
The two-day AmCham Summit, which ended Thursday, brings together businesses to stimulate commercial opportunities. President Ruto is set to visit the United States next month in the first state visit since he was elected. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Malawi and Israel have signed a new deal for Malawi to send unskilled laborers to Israel. The agreement is a departure from a previous arrangement where nearly 1,000 laborers were recently sent to work in Israel through private labor agents. Malawi officials said the new deal will help address challenges that workers were facing under the previous arrangement. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The memorandum of understanding comes a month after Malawi's parliament allowed the government to proceed with its program to send laborers work in farms and industries in Israel. Currently, Malawi is expected to send about 3,000 unskilled laborers to work on Israel's various agriculture farms. Most of the workers will replace Palestinians who no longer work in Israel because of tensions sparked by the war between Israel and Hamas. Malawian government spokesperson Moses Kunkuyu was part of a delegation that traveled to Israel to sign the deal. During a televised press conference in Lilongwe, Kunkuyu said the deal puts into place regulations regarding workers' rights.
We wish to see to it that the citizens benefit, their rights are not trampled upon, and that each party of the agreement gets what really stands, I mean, sticks to the provisions of that agreement. It is very easy to depart from this arrangement when there is no bigger force involved. So the government is involved, and we believe that even the challenges that the young people did raise when we visited them at their farms will not be there.
Kunkuyu said some of the laborers in Israel told the delegation that some agents were not honoring terms and conditions in their contract they signed before they went to Israel. Nearly 1,000 laborers were recently sent to work in Israel through labor agents. Kunkuyu, however, said besides farm laborers, some Israeli employers have expressed plans to come to Malawi to recruit skilled laborers in the construction industry, like builders, carpenters, welders, and those who fix tiles. The lawmakers in Malawi had earlier proposed that the recruitment exercise be done through their constituencies, saying this would provide an opportunity for those living in rural areas. Currently, most recruitment takes place in urban areas. Malawi's Foreign Affairs Minister, Nancy Tembo, led the delegation to Israel. She says the labor ministry will be responsible for recruitment of those willing to work in Israel.
The Minister of Labor will have to develop a plan and make sure that they understand the agreements, they are properly briefed, they know what is expected of them when they get to Israel. So this is what the Minister of Labor is working on at the moment.
Malawi's government began promoting work in Israel in November with the goal of generating more foreign exchange revenue. Malawi's Finance Minister, Simplex Chichura Banda, said in February that $735,000 had already been transferred to Malawi through the labor export arrangement with Israel. Authorities say the next group of laborers is expected to leave for Israel in 3 weeks. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre.
Malawi's information minister says President Lazarus Chakwera and Vice President Saulos Chilima have always had cordial working relationships. Vice President Chilima was arrested and charged with corruption in 2022. He was later stripped of some of his constitutional duties. Now, President Chakwera has tipped the vice president to represent Malawi at today, Friday's Tanzania Union Day commemoration. Information Minister Moses Kunkuyu tells me that corruption allegations against the vice president are being adjudicated in the courts, which have not imposed travel restrictions.
He is the vice president of the country. So where the president was invited and he decides to delegate the vice president, he is at liberty and supported by the law to do that.
The president has stripped the vice president of some responsibilities because of allegations of corruption. What happened to those allegations?
No, those allegations, they're being pursued in the courts of law. And what the president did, or the announcement that he made in 2022, was that he was withdrawing some of the delegated duties that he usually delegates to the vice president. He used his wisdom to do that. He was not compelled by any piece of legislation to do that. And this time around, he has also just applied his wisdom to delegate the vice president, and he's not flouting any law by doing that.
In other words, so the corruption allegation does not affect what the vice president is going to be doing in Tanzania?
Not at all, because it is only the courts that can put restrictions on somebody's travel. When one is answering charges, it's up to the courts to decide whether, if the bail conditions should apply, restricting that person from traveling or from crossing the borders. So the courts have not put any restrictions on the vice president, and that cannot come from anywhere else if the courts have not put in those restrictions.
So, Mr. Minister, can we say, therefore, the vice president going to Tanzania to represent the country, can we interpret that to mean that the relations between the vice president and President Chakwera are back on track?
There has never been any departure from their cordial relationship. Those that are in the country attest to the fact that they have always seen the president and the vice president working together cordially. So there is nothing like coming back together and the relationship coming back on track. They have always been on track.
Minister, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Good talking to you, James.
Moses Kunkunyu is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Buckley in Washington. Today is Friday, April 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Liberia's Supreme Court this week ordered President Joseph Boakai to withdraw his nomination for 10 new positions. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
Upon taking office, President Boakai nominated some officials to 10 new positions, including the Liberia Telecommunications Authority, Governance Commission, National Identification Registry, and the Liberia Lottery Authority. The nominations sparked debate across the country. Some Liberians accused the president of breaching the law, while others said he had the constitutional mandate to appoint and dismiss officials. Minister of Information Jerelemi Kpia says President Boakai welcomes the Supreme Court decision.
The president reaffirms his commitment to upholding the rule of law and will, therefore, honor the rulings of the High Court. President Boakai believes that strict adherence to the rule of law is fundamental to strengthening institutions and building a vibrant democracy.
Anosi Miamen is the executive director of the Center for Transparency and Accountability in Liberia, known as CENTAL. He tells VOA the ruling promotes good governance.
We welcome the ruling of the court. It is a win for the rule of law, and it's also a win for good governance in Liberia. We look forward to the government implementing the mandate of the court. Of course, the government has reasons to remove some of the people who are occupying those tenure positions at the moment, but it has to do that lawfully.
Councillor Arthur Johnson is the lawyer representing Garrison Yellow, the head of the Governance Commission and one of the parties favored by the court. He says the judiciary has demonstrated that certain officials of government are protected under the Constitution.
The Supreme Court's decision defines specific issues and answers specific questions regarding the Constitution of Liberia. There are certain officials of government, in short, who do not operate at the will and pleasure of the president, and those officials fall under Article 89. So Garrison Yellow is one of those officials who falls under Article 89 creation, the General Auditing Commission. And so the president of Liberia cannot remove an official of government from that particular autonomous agency with our cause. And cause is a condition subsequent. It must be proven before any action of removal.
Liberians remain divided over the Supreme Court's ruling. Some say it was a slap in the face of President Boakai, while others think it shows that President Boakai stands for good governance. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
Immunization has saved at least 154 million lives over the last 50 years. This is according to the World Organization, which says this was achieved through the efforts of countries, partners, and health workers. As the international community marked World Immunization Week, inoculating against diseases like smallpox is considered as one of humanity's greatest achievements. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
World Immunization Week is celebrated at the end of April with the aim of highlighting collective action and to promote the use of vaccines to protect people of all ages against diseases. The World Health Organization collaborates with countries worldwide in obtaining the necessary guidance and technical support needed to establish effective immunization programs. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says communities have to be informed on vaccine-preventable diseases.
World Immunization Week is a reminder of the life-saving power of vaccines. 50 years ago, in 1974, WHO launched the Expanded Program on Immunization, bringing countries together to provide children everywhere with vaccines. Since then, vaccination has saved an estimated 154 million lives from diseases like measles, tetanus, diphtheria, and pneumonia. Thanks to vaccination, an infant born today is 40% more likely to survive to their first birthday than they were 50 years ago.
The WHO African region says the continent still lags compared to other regions of the world in access to vaccines. About 1 in 5 African children do not receive all the necessary and basic vaccines. Harold Kipchumba, a 62-year-old Kenyan, is a polio survivor, a condition that can only be fought through immunization. He advocates for mass inoculation. He says his condition is as a result of negligence and lack of information.
Coming from a superstitious society then, people thought maybe I was being bewitched. But with time, the doctors confirmed that I had contracted polio, and sadly there was nothing more that could be done, and there was no treatment. So as I grew up and I was in school, and later learned that I got polio because of having missed in the vaccination, I thought it's high time that no other parent should remain ignorant or not informed.
Over 30 million children under the age of 5 in Africa still suffer from vaccine-preventable diseases. Among them, more than 500,000 children succumb to these illnesses every year, accounting for about 58% of all vaccine-preventable deaths globally. Kipchumba says his advocacy for immunization has been of great benefit to Kenya.
Our campaigns and advocacy work made a great difference in our country in that the health sector agreed to prioritize immunization and the county governments were able to put resources in immunization.
According to WHO, while more than 4 million more children were vaccinated globally in 2022 compared to 2021, there were still 20 million children who missed out on one or more of their vaccines. Tedros says conflicts, economic hardships, and rise in vaccine hesitancy are some of the threats to efforts to reach children.
Old killers like measles and diphtheria are resurging. This World Immunization Week, WHO is calling on governments to reverse this trend with renewed political commitment, sustainable funding, integrated planning, community engagement, and research and development. We can show it's humanly possible to give the life-saving power of vaccines to every child.
The WHO says at the moment immunization prevents between 3.5 to 5 million deaths every year from diseases like diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, influenza, and measles. For the past 50 years, the expanded program on immunization has focused on protecting all children against 6 childhood illnesses. Today, the number of recommended vaccines has increased to 13, with 17 more vaccines that are recommended based on specific circumstances. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in San Francisco.
The United States is planning to temporarily withdraw some of its troops from Chad, U.S. officials said on Thursday, a move that comes just days after Washington was forced to agree to remove its troops from neighboring Niger. Earlier this month, Chad's Air Force chief ordered the U.S. to halt activities at an airbase near the capital N'Djamena, according to a letter sent to the transitional government and seen by Reuters. It is now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CAF Champions League. Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa will host Esperance of Tunisia at the Loftus-Versfeld Stadium for the crucial second leg of their CAF Champions League semi-final clash on Friday, with Esperance of Tunisia holding a slender 1-0 lead from the first leg in raids. All eyes will be on Mamelodi Sundowns as they aim to overturn the deficit and secure their spot in the final. Rulani Mokwena, coach of Mamelodi Sundowns, believes they can still upturn the deficit.
With commitment, with enthusiasm, with positivity, we know that we can overturn the result. And the good thing about the second leg is that it takes place in front of our people. And we want to do it for them. We want to make them happy. And we are looking excited and looking forward to what is going to be a very, very good game.
In the other semi-final, Al Ahly of Egypt and TP Mazembe will square up for a showdown at the Al Salam Stadium in Cairo, also on Friday. Following a tense goalless draw in the first leg held in Lubumbashi, both teams are set to renew their battle in what promises to be a fiercely contested encounter. TP Mazembe player Augustine Oladapo says there's all to fight for as both sides battle for a ticket to play in the finals.
Yeah, it's a very big game. We know that Al Ahly is a very big team, but we saw them in Lubumbashi the way they play. We know it's going to be a very different game in Cairo. But I think we are not scared. We are here to play football, and we believe we will qualify. Yeah, in Cairo.
Staying with CAF competition, Zanzibar has been selected as host for the CAF Africa Schools Football Championship Finals 2024. The second season of Africa's largest youth football competition finals will be hosted at the recently refurbished Ahmad Stadium between the 21st to the 24th of May 2024. CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe and a number of African football legends will attend the finals of the 2024 edition of the competition that will feature winners from regional and zonal qualifiers. The CAF Africa Schools Football Championship features boys and girls under the age of 15 and is a first for world football and a brainchild of CAF President Dr. Motsepe, in line with his vision of investing in the youth of Africa. In cricket news, Nigeria has won the International Cricket Council's Cricket Initiative of the Year 2023 in Africa with the National Under-17 Championship, which has run for 5 years. The country was among the 21 nations celebrated by the ICC following another groundbreaking effort on and off the field in the year under review. Nigeria and other regional winners from other continents will now be put forward for voting to determine the global awardees in each category. It is the fourth honor Nigeria will be receiving in recognition of the country's strides in cricket in recent times. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Why would a woman choose to be part of a polygamous union nowadays? Culture, economy, free will? And is this type of marriage beneficial to both women and men? On the next edition of Our Voices, we will explore the issue, ask questions, and hopefully get some answers. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.